Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Modern Marvels. This is episode 17?
17.
My name is Marshall, and I'm your host. Today, joining me on the podcast, Mr. Josh Peters. Say hello, Josh.
Yo, what's up, guys?
And say hello, Matt Hicks, joining us once again.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so we got a little bit of news for you guys before we start the rest of our show. First up, I did want to point out that we will actually be putting ourselves up onto iTunes here soon. I can't say when exactly yet. I just started the process, so I don't know for sure exactly how long that'll take, but I have started that. That's in the works. So I know a lot of you guys, listeners out there, have been asking, oh, I don't have this on RSS feed, and, you know, MTG Cast is, you know, not always accessible or whatever. So yeah, now we're going to be up on iTunes here soon. So that's exciting to us. I never kind of thought I would, you know, put myself up on iTunes, you know, whether it be music or this or whatever. But so that's cool.
Oh, I have something to say too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shout out to Mark Evans. He's a local player. He came to our Legacy event at The Last Word a couple weeks ago. And I said he listened to us on the podcast. So, hey, Mark.
Glad you're joining, Mark.
Yeah. So,
also, I am on the subject of plugs. I want to plug dailymafia.com. If any of our listeners play any sort of board games or any sort of role outside of MTG, I encourage you guys to check out dailymafia.com. You guys can get in on some Mafia games. It's a pretty fun little organization, and I know that they have a bunch of MTG players there, and I know that a couple of the frequent players there listen to Modern Marvels. So if you guys are listening, thanks. We're growing, and it's happy news when we get to hear about people listening to the podcast. So thank you guys.
Yeah,
and it's not some crappy Facebook Mafia game either. So
no.
You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Or Forum Mafia or whatever. Although I do like Forum Mafia to some extent. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, if you guys are like poker players or all like bluff games, Mafia is a great time, and the guys there are super friendly and eager to have newcomers come in and play with them. So.
Yeah. All right. One more thing before we started the show. I did want to talk about Grand Prix New Jersey that's coming up this weekend. I know it's a Legacy event, but I highly encourage those of you who can go, even if you don't like have a Legacy deck, you know, just go like watch, go spectate. If you can't physically go, you know, go watch the, you know, Star City Games stream. Star City Games does a really great job of, you know, doing media and presentation. So really take the time to go watch Legacy. You will make yourself a better player by watching Legacy, because a lot of what you see in Legacy also applies to Modern. So, yeah, do yourself a favor. Go watch Grand Prix New Jersey. If you have the ability to go, I strongly encourage you to go.
I want to see Star City Games on the front of Twitch.tv on Saturday and Sunday. So
If you're within 2 hours and you can make it feasible, I would say go. Also, artist John Avon will be there.
Christopher Rush.
He does not come out to tournaments very often.
Yeah, RK Post.
He's one of the biggest land artists out there. I gave Corey, a local player, a stack of unhinged lands, so he's going to try to get those signed, so that should be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Cool. It's going to be a grand old time for Magic players. So
I know
again,
I'll be watching. I know that these guys will be watching. We encourage you guys to
I'm really sad I can't go. I've been helping a lot of guys prepare for it, which is honestly...
What would you play, Marshall?
Actually, I just put together Dark Maverick.
Maverick, huh?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I was probably just going to play Bug Control of some sort, because Treasure Cruise, you know, but...
What's this Treasure Cruise card you're talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I've heard that... I mean, it's like a common or something. It's just like... It's one of those, like, trash cards. I just, like, have a pile of them. Like, lying around.
So, again, I have been spending, you know, a lot of the time playing Magic lately has been put into, you know, getting people prepared for a Grand Prix jersey And so, again, really encourage all you listeners out there to, even if you're not into Legacy, which is a shame because you should be if you're listening to this podcast, go do yourself a favor and listen to that. So
yeah, Modern's great and all, but there's another format called Legacy, and it's also awesome.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of news for you guys. We're going to go ahead and roll into the meat of the podcast here. So first up, we got Matt has put together a list around Bitter Ordeal, which we had, you know, talked about in previous podcasts for cards that had been suggested to us. And so Bitter Ordeal was one of the cards that was suggested. So Matt has put together a deck, and we're going to talk about that. After that, we're going to get into a little bit more competitive discussion. We're going to talk about a very small, again, another small tournament report by myself. I played another local event and wanted to talk about the deck and that sort of stuff. So that's the stuff for tonight. Matt, why don't you go ahead and take us off with this spicy work of shenanigans.
This is a complete brew. I didn't find this anywhere. A couple of the combos are pretty known combos, but sort of worth them instead.
Yeah, no, note right there. A couple of the combos.
Dude, he's pulling combos from EDH.
Yeah, some EDH combos here, but they work. Like,
yeah.
If you can
protect, you can do them in Modern. So
find the pieces. Yeah. So I talked about Bitter Ordeal last week, which is a black rare from Future Sight. It costs 2 and a black. When you cast it, you get to look through an opponent's library for one card and exile it. It also has Gravestorm, which is like regular Storm, except it counts the number of permanents that have gone to a graveyard from play that turn. So if you could somehow make a combo where you have permanents going to the graveyard infinite times, you can just get rid of their whole deck and they lose. One of the combos that
right there.
Yeah, so that's the main goal of the deck. So when I went to make this deck, I thought there's a few artifact combos, infinite combos that you can do to get infinite cards into the graveyard. As well as stopping the combo, because sometimes you get into an infinite loop and you just draw the game. So that's one thing you should consider when you're doing infinite combos, is you should be able to stop it when you need to.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So 3 Bitter Ordeals. One part of the combo is Shroom, which is a Sphinx artifact creature from Alara Reborn. Alara
Reborn.
It's been reprinted in several.
It was Greyborn and the Greyborn deck.
This card has 3 colors and it's mana cost.
It's Esper color, so it's from the Esper. Yeah, the Esper region of Alara. It's a legendary artifact creature Sphinx. It costs 3, a white, a blue, and a black. It's a 5/5 flyer, and the meat of it is when it comes into play, you may return an artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So there's 2 cards that I've added to this list that works to go infinite with Shroom to be able to build a deal for as many as you want. The first, and this is a pretty big EDH combo, but yeah, we'll see how this works in like a real constructive format. The first card is Phyrexian. Real serious format. The first card is Phyrexian Metamorph, which is a clone type creature, but it can also clone an artifact. It costs 3 colorless and 1 Phyrexian blue, so you can cast on turn 3 if you need to and pay 2 life. And you also have Sculpting Steel, which pretty much does the same thing. It copies an artifact when it comes into play. All right, so you get one of these 2 in your graveyard, either Phyrexian Metamorph or Sculpting Steel. You cast Shroom, you get one of the 2 into play.
I'm sorry, could you remind us of what Sculpting Steel does again?
Yeah, quick? When it comes into play, it's like a clone, except you choose an artifact instead of a creature.
Great, I'm
so
sorry.
It comes into play as a copy of any artifact on the battlefield.
And is it a, I'm sorry, what's the casting cost again?
It costs 3. Okay. 3 colorless.
3 colorless, got it.
Yeah. I think it's from the original Mirrodin, and it was also printed in 10th edition.
Okay.
Yeah. So when Shroom comes into the battlefield, it gets one of these two cards, comes into play as a copy of Shroom. Before its come into play ability can trigger, the legend rule makes you sack one of them.
Right.
You just get it back infinite times. But it's coming to play. So it triggers a few other cards in this that makes this combo go. We have Lotus Bloom, which is it's basically Black Lotus, but you can't play it for zero.
Yeah. It's Black Lotus suspend, a couple turns later.
Yeah, you play it for suspend zero. But if it's in your graveyard, you can have it come right into play.
Right, yeah.
You play Thirst for Knowledge, which is a two colorless, one blue instant spell, which lets you look at the top three cards or lets you draw three cards and discard two cards unless you discard an artifact card.
Right.
So you have a couple of ways to get these artifacts into your graveyard to make your combo go.
And Thirst for Knowledge helps you mulligan, like, a lot.
Yeah. And it lets you pitch extra cards that you don't need.
Just want to pause right here to take a moment to gush about Thirst for Knowledge.
Honestly, it's a wonderful card. It really is.
Well, before Treasure Cruise, in my opinion, it was actually probably the best draw spell in Modern. Unfortunately, it had never really been held to that standard, really, I don't think. But
the only decks that really played it were the blue version of Robots, which was the worst version, and then
Mono Blue Tron.
Mono Blue Tron?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mono Blue Tron plays it because Mono Blue Tron played Solemn Simulacrum and the Talismans, which I have three of the black-blue Talismans and two of the blue-white Talismans, Dominance and Progress, respectively.
Yeah.
Just to help with mana ramp and if you need to pitch something for Thirst for Knowledge. So I have I like how Thirst for Knowledge doubles as part of helping you combo, putting them in your graveyard. So I have the whole Shroom combo with Phyrexian Metamorph and
Sculpting Steel.
Yeah. The other combo I added in there just for fun, which I've seen in one other Bitter Ordeal deck, is the Enchantment Heartless Summoning, which is,
it's been a while since we've seen that.
I mean, it's from Innistrad, so it hasn't been too long.
And it helps you cast your Shrooms.
It does help cast your Shrooms cheaper, your Metamorphs cheaper. The card that combos with this is Mirror Retriever, which says
let's pull it up real quick.
Two
cost artifact creature. So with Heartless Summoning, it reduces the cost of all your creature spells by two. So you can play a Mirror Retriever for free. But the drawback of Heartless Summoning is it gives all your creatures -1/-1, which Mirror Retriever has one toughness, so automatically go to your graveyard.
Yeah.
the combo with this is you need two Mirror Retrievers. One will automatically just die when it comes
and
to play.
You start juggling them.
Yeah, and then you play a second one, and you automatically get one back to your hand, and then you Grave Storm or Infinite. Yeah.
And then Bitter Ordeal.
Bitter Ordeal. That's the two combo engines that's in this deck to go infinite with Bitter Ordeal.
Again, just wanted to point it out. This Mirror Retriever, for those of you who don't know, is actually in the flavor text of Johnny Combo Maker or Combo. What is that card? Johnny Combo.
Johnny Combo Player.
Yeah, Combo Player. So, just so you know, in case you didn't already figure it out, this is pretty combo-y and.
This is super combo. This is all in on the combo. There's no backup plan. Other than three Wormcoil Engines, in case you just want to play Wormcoil Engine as a 5/5 format.
And that was a thing you could do in Standard, too, back in when Innistrad first hit. I remember that Heartless Summoning deck was fairly popular, especially with, Mirror Superion. Mirror Superior only cost two mana, it was like a 5/5 or whatever.
Which I considered for this deck, but just there's wasn't enough room.
Yeah, it's a little bit too janky.
I mean, you're GMing Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas.
Yeah, so I have two Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, which is good to find your combo pieces. He lets you look at the top five.
You just can also I won the game accidentally. -4. GG.
Yeah, you can -4 to. Yeah.
Yeah, you're
also playing Wormcoil Engine, so you have a lot of ways to just kind of kill them.
Yeah. You can also, I added two Darksteel Citadels in the land base for the make a 5/5 indestructible creature.
Yeah.
Which is also
agree with that.
Yeah. So as so the Bitter Ordeal, the Shroom, Heartless Summoning, Metamorph, Wormcoil Engine, have four Lotus Blooms. Even if you don't have them in your graveyard to get back with Shroom. By the way, at the end of your combo, when you're getting an infinite, Shroom can just put a Lotus Bloom into play. You pay three black, and you Bitter Ordeal. So that's sort of the end
so
of
the
combo.
So you can get the mana for it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, just floating, if you have two Blooms in your opening hand and just put them out there for suspend zero, you can almost always win on when they come into play on turn four.
Cause oh, I think that was turn three.
Extra mana.
Is it suspend three?
Or... I think suspend three, yeah.
So, okay.
yeah, I'm pretty sure it's they come
yeah,
in on turn four.
Suspend three, so you come in on turn four.
Okay.
That was the big deal of the second Sunrise deck when it, before it got banned, is if you had two Lotus Blooms on turn one, you almost always won. So Lotus Bloom, an obviously powerful card that's, I think, is underused in modern.
As of now, I would agree, yeah. It's... Yeah. Pretty
so I got, yeah, like I said, the five talismans. I have two Pact of Negations in the main deck, and that is to mainly just protect the combo. You know, you're going off, you go infinite, and they're just holding the remand for your Bitter Ordeal. Well, I guess that is Gravestorm, so it doesn't really matter. Never mind. Yeah, Gravestorm's kind of good, like Real Storm.
Yeah.
So. I have, like I said, Tezzeret to find the combo pieces. But that's basically the main deck. The land base consists of four Glimmer Voids because sometimes you need three colors, Cash Room or whatever you need. Glimmer Voids, just if you're playing artifact deck, probably playing Glimmer Void. Two Counter Souls in case you're playing a you obviously named Sphinx, so you can cast your Shroom or maybe sometimes Wormcoil Engine to get that Wormcoil through counter spells. Two Darksteel Citadel, one Orborg to
make the Darksteel Citadel swamps, I guess.
Yeah, fix your Counter Souls, fix your Citadels. I have four Watery Grave, four Polluted Delta, two Hollow Fountain, two Godless Shrine, one Plains, and one Basic Island. So, pretty much standard combo land base, I think.
Kinda. It's
yeah, like maybe.
In Legacy, it's more like four Gemstone Mine, four Mana
right,
Confluence.
It's not really. I don't think it's that important. You're mostly a black and blue deck, so
you don't
really need the white too much.
I don't necessarily disagree with Glimmer Void, but I'm really wondering if you had a critical amount of artifacts to make it, you know, not a bad card.
Definitely sometimes you have the two Glimmer Void opening hand deck.
Yeah, and then because, you know, unlike in Infinity, you don't really have any zero drop artifacts that actually come into play, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That seems kind of iffy to me.
Well, Mox Opal was a consideration for this deck as well.
Yeah. Because that makes it super speedy. But again, Mox Opal is tough to fit in there when you don't have like a.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts in this deck. I mean, Mox Opal seems pretty good, but, like, I don't know what you'd cut at that point.
Yeah. Glimmer Void could easily be Darkslick Swords, I think.
Darkslick Swords I could get behind, kind of.
So,
definitely. Do you think about something like Thoughtcast?
Yeah, Thoughtcast could work. Again, it's just you're in on artifacts, but not early game, I guess. Not like Affinity would be.
Yeah, so and that's, again, I think that's actually a strike against Thoughtcast, too, because when I played, like, a similar deck to this. I played, like, the Grand Architect sort of thing. And, right. You know, I tried Mox Opal, Thoughtcast, didn't try Glimmer Void, but those cards are both, unfortunately, like, unless you're really just playing Affinity, unfortunately, there's just not enough artifacts to really make it worth it. So, so they seem like good inclusions, but trust me, I've been there, done that, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I also had Serum Visions and Gitaxian Probe on the short list, but they didn't quite make it either, so.
Yeah. Also, I do think there is just a... I think eight Shocklands is probably a bit too many. I mean, with Burn running around and all. I mean, not that this is, you know, meant to be like a meta deck or anything, but
yeah,
I think that's that would be quite a loss at life with the eight. But
well, I mean, I think you just need to find.
I mean, any way you cut it, this deck is going to take damage from its mana base. Like, you're either doing like the City of Brass. I mean,
yeah, you cut Glimmer Void for mana confluence. Right. And, right. Yeah.
or you're playing a bunch of Shocklands. Just that's. I mean, that's how this.
Right.
Is going to have to go because you're trying to cast Shroom, which.
On curve. Yeah.
Yeah, on curve or earlier.
But Matt, why don't you go ahead and go into the sideboard for us?
Sure.
That's also kind of spicy.
It gets even better.
For the sideboard, I went with a well-established Esper plan, which is Gifts Ungiven, because some decks just can't beat some of your gifts that you can get. So three Gifts Ungiven, one Damnation, one Wrath of God, one Day of Judgment, which is the standard, not standard, it's the, you know, most used gifts destruction plan. You have your Elesh Norn, Iona, and Barrel Rites combo as well, because a lot of decks just can't beat an Elesh Norn or Iona. Just think about your Delver deck with the Elesh Norn out. They can't play any of their guys.
They lose. Unless you're already at like three life or something.
Ungivening a Elesh Norn.
Yep. And then just some value stuff for the rest of the sideboard. Two Dark Blast, three Chalice of the Void, and one Engineer Explosives, which just cover a wide variety of decks.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Dark Blast right now just because a lot of X1s going around, so.
Yeah, Gutshot is also a consideration, but Dark Blast is probably just better.
For this deck, I'd rather play Dark Blast. Gutshot is, I think it's better in, when you're actually playing an aggro deck, and then you can always just kind of hit, you know, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned earlier the Chalice of the Void, probably for burn.
Yeah.
Confirm or deny.
And building this deck, I took that into consideration of not having, I don't think I have any one drops, so I can safely board in, you know, three chalices, do it on one, and sometimes it just locks out half their deck.
Right. So. Well, not only that, but you do have the ability to ramp with, like, your talisman, so you could, I mean, you wouldn't have, like, necessarily a timely, you know, chalice at two, as per se, like, in Legacy when you got the soul lands or whatever, but it does help you crank out, like, a, you know, you could possibly have a turn three chalice at two, which is against a lot of decks is pretty strong. So
yeah,
I'm just happy that this deck can like go like turn two Heartless Summoning, like potentially turn three Wurmcoil Legion.
Yeah,
like just not turn three. I guess it'd be turn four.
Yeah, turn four.
But like that's gotta just kill like a handful of decks. Like.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why Tron was good, right? You could crank out turn three Worm Coils with Tron and even have extra mana or whatever. But
yeah, well, like, and with this deck, if you have to go on the Worm Coil plan, then you just play your Metamorph as Worm Coil, then you play your Sculpting Steel
as a Worm Coil.
What are you going to do with, like, five Worm Coils on the board? You know?
Well, you lose. That's what,
you lose.
Yeah, they're 5/5s, but they both... They still have lifelink.
Or you somehow stop that from happening, and then, you know.
And I feel like Wurmcoil Engine is just, like, pretty happily situated because it, well, obviously it blocks everything profitably because it has Death Touch and it has lifelink, which puts you out of range of all the burn decks running around, so.
Assuming you get it out that fast, which is plausible, but.
Yeah.
Not necessarily guaranteed.
I don't have room for Batterskull, but if it was a creature, I think I would go for it, but.
Ooh.
Wurmcoil is just where you want to be.
I feel like if you were to go Batterskull, you could go more the Tesserator route where you're just playing like value artifacts and stuff. But
yeah.
Then you're kind of getting away from the bitter ordeal, which was the challenge. So
the challenge, yeah. Well, I think I fulfilled it with it has two separate combos for bitter ordeal. So.
Right. So now you got to put your money where your mouth is and somehow get this list together and play it.
Oh, I could play that. There's
so many decks to play, Matt. I have to build this Meddling Mage deck.
You can play Meddling Mage, and we'll have a turn report next.
Podcast. It's gotta
happen. Well, so Modern FNM is up for last word this week.
Yeah, this week.
So I guess that this sounds week. Like a plan. well, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I want to play Bant, but I'll play this week and see how it goes.
Yeah. I should say yeah. Or, you know, of course, at the last word, it's nice because, you know, you have sometimes players who are willing to play, you know, a deck that you lend out to them. So, you know, that's also a consideration. You could maybe someone else to play Bant. And, yeah, I don't know.
Someone handing me a deck? Oh, please no, not that.
I'd rather play this and someone else play the Bant deck because Bant's pretty straightforward. You just play a bunch of dudes and
yeah.
Attack.
That's really what I was kind of recommending was that, because I know we had talked earlier about, you know, playing, you know, having a deck, going into an event blind with a deck. I think this deck is a little, little too off the wall for that.
Yeah, there's going to be some opening hands. You're just like, what's going on?
Well, I don't know what this deck is.
I need to know real cheer.
I feel like the double bitter ordeal opening hand is just going to be really awkward.
Yeah,
that's why I kept it.
But that's why there's only three copies, I guess. That's nice.
But, you need to find it enough to have it.
Yeah, right. That's true.
So,
I mean, but then you thirst for knowledge and pitch a bitter ordeal. Or, thirst for knowledge, I love thirst for knowledge because it just fixes all of your crappy opening hands. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, it's a good card. So.
Super value and instant speed. So, I guess Dig Through Time is a consideration for this deck. I didn't even think about that, but
I feel like Dig Through Time is a consideration for every deck.
Yeah,
or Treasure Cruise. Am I right?
Not this deck, I don't think.
Nah.
This deck needs its graveyard.
Drawing three cards isn't like looking at the top seven and picking two is a lot better than just drawing three.
Yeah, it's this
deck. Yes,
this deck. Yeah.
So, speaking of that, let's go ahead and move on to, again, thanks, Matt. This deck is really sweet.
Please
make some notes, and I'm looking forward to the tournament report already. So,
sure, yeah.
We're going to go ahead and move on. Let's talk about the tournament report. Again, I mean, it's hardly what I'd call a tournament, but I did want to talk about a deck that I'd gotten a chance to play lately, so... we're going to move on to that. Again, as far as an event, it was seven players, three rounds. And on top of that, I had a round one bye. So there's two matches I got to talk about, and hopefully there's some valuable information in that.
So this tournament was handed to you on a silver platter.
Yeah. I had the round one bye. I lost my second round and then won the third round. So, 2-1, not that huge of a deal. I think I won a pack or something.
Sweet.
So,
what'd you open?
Garbage. I think it was a Helm Smasher or something. Mm. The Mardu guy.
Hey, he's not garbage at all. I like Zergo.
I mean, he's not like...
Dude, he gets in the red zone for seven on the turn you play him.
Yeah.
And to get a little bit off track here, I played against him in Limited at FNM. In a draft, and I played the 1/1 regenerator guy.
Oh no.
Wall Zergo Helm Smasher quite nicely, actually. And he's got attack with him every turn.
Huge.
Yeah. So I won that game, by the way.
he only gets a counter when the creature dies.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah.
That's so.
Anyway, so
yeah, that kind of just ruins their day, doesn't it?
Let me pull up the list real quick. So I played Rug Delver, and it's actually, on our last episode, or was the episode before that?
It is the welcoming mat of Rug Delvers. It's very lightly rug.
It's blue, red, splash green. So, yeah.
Don't you mean Timur Delver?
Timur Delver, excuse me.
That is the one I actually just can't get behind. I'm totally cool with Abzan and Jeskai right now, but I can't call things Timur. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I call it a Rug Delver just because it's hard to break the habit, I guess. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Anyway, go ahead.
So it's actually the same exact second place list from the Star City Games event that we had talked about. I think it was our last show. Was it the one or before that? From Minneapolis or whatever. Except instead of playing for Young Pyromancer, I splashed green for Tarmogoyf instead of Young Pyromancer. And just to see what I don't know. I just want to try it out. I mean, the sideboard is significantly different too, but other than that, it's only like six cards off from that deck. So anyway, I'll go ahead and read off the list real quick. Because again, it's very similar to the other one. Well, actually, I'll just read off the changes. So instead of having, again, four Young Pyromancer, I have four Tarmogoyfs. And instead of having three mana leaks, I have one mana leak and two Deprive. I'm just a fan of Deprive. And I'll get more into that later. But yeah. So that's the only change. The land base I had, of course, was obviously a little bit different. One forest, one mountain, one wooded foothills, two breeding pool, two island, three steam vents, four misty rainforest, four scalding tarn, and yeah, that's it. Sideboard real quick. One flame slash, two relic of progenitus. I don't know why I played relic, but I don't know. I had this like this intrepid fear of graveyard decks, and I had to be prepared for them in case graveyard shenanigans.
It turns off your opponent's treasure cruises.
Yeah, well, it turns off my treasure cruises, which is the biggest problem, so there's that.
It's true, but your opponent's treasure cruises are sometimes more threatening, and sometimes you don't have treasure cruises in your hand, so yeah. I guess.
Right. Anyway, two spell snares, two vapor snag, two ancient grudge, two combust, two Izzet charm, one counterflux, and one electrolyze. So that was the list. Again, I had a round one bye, which is kind of upset because I really wanted to get into more games, so I had a little bit more to talk about, but not the case, I'm afraid. So, my first round was against Scapeshift. I lost in three. It was fairly close, but I'll just go ahead and give you a brief rundown of the games real quick. So game one, he won that game. Obviously, I just didn't get there on time. It felt like and this is the way I lost both games, actually. So in he got seven lands in play, went to Scapeshift, and I had a Deprive, which I was glad it was a Deprive and not a mana leak or whatever. And I went to Deprive Scapeshift, and then he remains my Deprive. And I'm like, well, don't got any more mana to recast it. So I lost that game.
Yeah, it feels pretty bad.
Yeah. Game two, I actually got him kind of by surprise because I top decked my second Monastery Swift Spear and aggroed him out. I punched him for like 10 on the last turn because I had a Tarmogoyf and a Monastery Swift Spear, and then I cast two spells. Swung for 10 on the turn that he died, which I was like, wow. That was good. Actually, I'm sorry, it was 9, because the Tarmogoyf was a 3-4. But I was very surprised to pull that win out. Like I said, it was thanks to top deck Monastery Swift Spear. Game 3, again, lost pretty similarly. He went to cast Scapeshift. Still didn't have him quite dead on board. He was at like 3 life or something, and I went to Deprive it, and he actually, the Deprive resolved, Scapeshift got countered, but then he just cast another Scapeshift, and then I lost. So, one note, actually, on that, on the resolution of those games, the first game, when he cast Scapeshift, I was like, yeah, you got it, whatever, concede. In game three, when he cast his second Scapeshift, I was like, yeah, you got it, and then he went to extend his hand, I was like, wait a minute. Show me. And so he went to show me just to make sure that he actually could kill me. And I think I just kind of want to point that out to some of our listeners, anytime they go for a combo or something like that, don't just concede. I know sometimes it's kind of easy to get into the habit of that, especially in paper. Cause on MTGO, it's like, yeah, they got to play it out anyway. So you might as well just.
Also, I know this is a pretty hotly debated topic, just sort of in-game manners in the Magic community. If you're playing the combo deck and you resolve your Scapeshift, don't extend the hand first.
Yeah, you haven't won the game.
Yeah, you haven't won the game. Don't be that guy who's just like, all right, I resolved my scape shift. You know, here's my hand. Shake it. We're done. Like, that's not how that works. You go until your opponent concedes. You can't just assume concession. I've had that happen to me.
Yeah,
a handful of times, and you just look like the biggest asshole. I'm sorry. Play out your combo unless, if you can demonstrate,
right,
and like you've convinced your opponent that you know they're dead. Like, play it out, because
yeah,
just don't use bad manners.
Right. I'm right there with you, and I've seen that a lot, and I'm like, you know,
yeah,
I'm not going to point out any fingers here in the show, obviously, but you know, it is a thing that I see, and it really irks me. If anything, instead of, you know, I can understand if you don't want to like play it out, but don't shake your hand. So if you don't want to play it out, just like ask, you know,
yeah.
You know, I had this combo. Do you want me to show it to you, or would you just like to concede? Like
the yeah. biggest, the one. Biggest one recently has been Jeskai Ascendancy, because sometimes you know you play Jeskai Ascendancy and that combo can whiff sometimes. You may not.
I mean, any combo can whiff sometimes. So.
Well, Bitter Ordeal can't, but. But like sometimes you just draw lands off of your looting and you just don't get there. It's happened. I've seen it happen a few times with Jeskai Ascendancy, especially because this is like a real combo deck in Standard. And people are not used to combo decks in Standard. So
that's a good point.
Wait for them to kill you. Also on Modo, make them kill you because time is a factor. If it takes them 10 minutes to do their whole combo, well, they're down 10 minutes and then time becomes a real issue on their part.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a, you know, a dick move, but if they're playing a combo deck, they need to.
Oh, it happens all the time. And people, like, you know, good MTGO players know that, and they rely on that factor a lot to win games.
There's one thing I can thank the new Modo design for, and this is the only thing I am giving the new Modo design, because somehow that's a whole other podcast.
Indeed.
The
save it,
right
save
click
it.
Attack with all creatures is
yeah,
amazing.
That's nice. they've had auto yields, but I think they've improved it a little bit as well. In this client, you can also right click like if you have a stack of lands and choose to tap them all for one color that you want. There's a few things, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of nice features that they've made to speed things up. So
I remember like making infinite dudes with a couple decks and like having to sit there and tap all of them to attack. And being at like 2 minutes on my clock and just being like, come on!
Yeah.
Dead, please!
Yeah. That's a real thing, so... can't shortcut that on MTGO. Which is why Scapeshift is such a good deck. Because it never had that issue. It was just resolve Scapeshift, get some land,
you're
dead.
You just have to tell where to point the damage.
Yeah. You just have to assign each trigger at your opponent.
Right.
So... but yeah, so that's, that was my first match against Scapeshift, which is kind of a bummer. You know, honestly, I was really surprised. Like, you know, there was a couple of times where it's like, I had Treasure Cruise in my hand, but I just like, I can't cast this Treasure Cruise because if you cast Scapeshift and I'm like tapped out or whatever, I'm dead, you know? So I was really surprised in that matchup. Like Treasure Cruise is not like, was not a game breaker. Like I didn't have the mana to abuse like all the extra cards that I had drawn. Like I probably had you know 5 or 6 cards in my hand at the end of each game, but it didn't, like I said, it didn't matter because he cast Scapeshift, he countered my counterspell, and I lost. Now obviously if there was like a free counterspell like there was in Legacy, like Force of Will, that would be a huge problem, because you know, I probably would have had like 2 Force of Wills
as
like
backup
or packed. but obviously Rug Delver doesn't really want to pay for Pact and Negation on the backup. So,
no.
So yeah, can't really play Pact, but it's one thing I could see happening. But yeah, so that was my, round 2 loss. Round 3, I played against Birthing Pod. Also, again, just to kind of plug, I did, you know, mention to this player the podcast. And so back in a previous podcast, I had also, in a tournament report, I had, you know, made a note on a particular player. Anytime, you know, if I mention you on the show, like in a game or whatever, I, of course, never, you know, mean anyone does, like, you know, that they're bad players or anything like that. Just wanted to say that because I hadn't gotten a little bit of flack in real life just on that. Not actually flack, but just kind of like playful, like, oh, why'd you bash me on the show? Because, but anyway, so, so yeah, this game I won, in three. I was surprised actually that I won it. And again, it did kind of come down to a mistake that the player made in game three. So game one, I was able I actually lost game one. Pot, I think, is actually a kind of a difficult matchup for a Delver deck, simply because it's like they just have, like, all the good creatures to block your creatures, unless you have that critical mass of burn spells and stuff, which some of the blue-red Delver decks do, but, you know, definitely not me. I was, you know, like, again, I was in Rug Delver, a little bit more controlly, but not really controlly enough to handle Birthing Pot. Because Birthing Pot just has that inevitability, you know, where it's like, you know, I'll cast my turn two Kitchen Finks, pot into it to get that creature that I need to kill, you know, to get the Shriek Maw, or, you know. It's, like I said, a lot of inevitability, and Delver doesn't really do good against decks with that sort of inevitability. And, again, that's why I'm kind of surprised that I won this match. But in game one, he definitely just kind of, you're just not actually doing anything that Delver didn't really get there, and I lost. Game two, I did, you know, I was able to aggro out. Vapor Snags came in, which I think is pretty strong against Birthing Pot, which kind of relies on having its creatures in play, both, you know, to block and do things, but also, you know, to use with Pot or Court of Calling for whatever reason. So definitely an MVP for this matchup. I think that was about the only thing I brought in. I think I might have also brought in the Flame Slash and the Electrolyze, but...
No, are you signing Flame Slash?
Yeah, I mean, just get, you know, gets more dudes out of the way. Like, I mean, Spellskite is kind of a problem sometimes.
I feel like there's probably better things.
It's just more removal, because they, you know, all they do is play creatures, so... Like, even if they play, like, the turn one Bop, and I have a Flame Slash in hand, I'll probably just Flame Slash, like, just to keep them off that mana.
Yeah, I mean, I killed the Bop with fire. I mean, isn't that cool?
Yeah, indeed. Kill it with fire. Game two, just, you know, got a pretty good, solid aggro start, and, you know, kept them at bay with the Remands and the Vapor Snags and stuff. Game three, and this is where things get a little bit more interesting. He gets, he hard casts Thrun. And I'm like, ooh.
Throwing the last bro.
Yeah, throwing the last bro has stopped me. at the time, I had two Tarmogoyfs in play, or was it two? It was either two or one. I ended up having a second one later, but it was only a 3/4, so obviously that walls the Tarmogoyf pretty hard. Didn't have any Delvers. It was looking pretty grim for me. I had a Monastery Swift Spear, and, you know, he's just, you know, get more creatures out. We're not, like, swinging into each other, because, you know, he's got his Thrun, I got my Tarmogoyf, if he doesn't want to have to, like, regenerate or anything. We were just kind of looking at each other. But, again, with that inevitability thing going on, he's getting more creatures into play, and I'm like, ugh, this game is just going to end miserably. However, finally, I get a second Tarmogoyf, and I finally get a creature into the graveyard, because for whatever reason, there wasn't a creature in the graveyard. And he swings with his Thrun, which I was like, what? Okay. So I block it with my now 4/5 Tarmogoyf, and then he realizes it's a 4/5 Tarmogoyf. So he has to spend the mana to regenerate it, because obviously you don't want to lose it.
I have just made a habit of every time I enter combat with an opposing Tarmogoyf on my opponent's board.
Or even on my side of the play.
Yeah, I just count the graveyard. Just like every single time. Just count the graveyard.
Have
like,
this huge block that says 4.
Don't trust what they say their Tarmogoyf is at. Count the graveyard.
Well,
I
so
know
yeah,
what the
Matt.
number was at.
Like about what
they
you're
can't
talking about, Matt.
They can't misrepresent what it is if you ask.
I know, but maybe they counted wrong. Maybe they've only counted their graveyard. Maybe like there's a lot of times like people will end up having 3-4 Tarmogoyfs when they think they have 4-5 or 4-5 when they think they have 3-4. So like
yeah. And a real life story actually at Grand Prix Richmond, I was playing against Storm. And I had that same exact thing happen to me, or I had Tarmogoyfs, and I had a die out on the table that was representing the power and toughness of Tarmogoyf, and I swung in for some damage, and then I realized, like, a turn later that it was the wrong, power and toughness of Tarmogoyf, and had, had to call a judge, we both got a warning, blah,
and
blah,
then
blah.
And you have a mess, and, yeah, it just...
I lost out on some damage on that one.
Every time you're in a combat... in either direction with a Tarmogoyf, count the graveyard.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the moral of that story, essentially. So anyway, he blocks, he attacks with his Thrun, and he had a flyer. I believe he had a flyer. I can't remember who. It was like a... It wasn't very big. Was that?
Flyer Birds of Paradise, they don't play that many flyers.
No, it was something else that had power and toughness. Or no, I'm sorry, yeah. Well, anyway, so he swings in the air for some damage, too, and I just took it, whatever, because after that, I knew I had enough to crack back, because I had a Vapor Snag in my hand, and I had a Remand in case he went to cast anything else for a turn. So he, on his main phase, too, he went to cast Scavenging Ooze, and I was like, nope, that ain't going to happen. So I remanded that to his hand, and he didn't have the mana to recast it, and then I Vapor Snagged his Spirit of the Labyrinth and then cracked back for lethal. So, again, just, I mean, he kind of made a mistake there. With all due respect, he said, he was new to the deck, so, that happens. Pata's a pretty tough deck to play.
Yeah.
So
well, even in that situation, like, it's probably better to just let the Thrun go rather than spend 4 mana to regenerate at that point.
I think given his life total, yeah, I would agree with you.
If you have a Scavenging Ooze and you can just play the Scavenging Ooze and then...
But sometimes it's really hard to let go of Thrun.
I know.
Thrun the last bro, we would miss you too much. So, but yeah, so that was, that's all the games I had gotten to play with the deck. So some thoughts on the deck, and then I'll let you guys ask some questions, I guess. Josh, you could?
Yep, sneeze. Sorry about that.
Okay, sorry. So the two Snapcaster Mages, big mistake. Should have just been two more Monastery Swift Spears main board.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't cast a single Snapcaster Mage. I mean, again, I only played 6 games or whatever, but every time it was in my hand, I was like, I need to be doing something else. So, not only that, but as good as Treasure Cruise is, I still had to make sure I was actively hitting that threshold to cast Treasure Cruise reliably. And believe it or not, that is somewhat difficult to do, which is what makes the card remotely fair, if you can even say that. So, yeah, Snapcaster Mage was pretty meh. So, yeah. Everything else in the deck was pretty solid, though. Well, Forked Bolt, obviously, in this Gapeshift matchup, was like, But I think given the meta, Forked Bolt is a pretty solid choice. He was also playing in his original list, he was playing one Pillar of Flame, and I think he was playing some Magma Sprays in the sideboard. Granted that I played against Pod, I kind of wish I had brought in some more. But, it still turned out well for me because in that second game that I won, it actually came down to I top decked a Pillar of Flame to get his Kitchen Finks because that's the only real way to deal with Kitchen Finks.
Yeah, and Voice of Resurgence as well.
Yeah, Voice of Resurgence was also a big problem, which, he ran away with that a little bit in game one, which, what cost me there. So I think... probably would have cut Flame Slash on the board, maybe something else for either Magma Spray or Pillar of Flame. Probably Pillar of Flame, because you can, if I had played for Monastery Swift Spear, Pillar of Flame, even though it's a sorcery, you can still aim it at your opponent's head and trigger it on your turn when you want to attack with it, which I think is pretty good. Because the only benefit to Magma Spray is that it's an instant, but you can't point it at your opponent's head. So I think I like Pillar of Flame a little bit more, but I'm glad I like Magma Spray too. So yeah, that's again, the Deprive. I don't know why this card didn't see more play. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm just wrong, but I don't know. It's, I like it. And it's like, again, back in that Scapeshift matchup, it was like, if I had a mana leak, it would have just been nothing. Like, so,
I mean, what do you think of it versus, I mean, you have, I guess if you bounce,
it's bad against Remand.
What's that?
It's pretty bad against Remand.
Yeah. But, I mean, you still have, it's better than Mana Leak in that situation.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, like, there's a lot of opportunities to get two for one, at least with Remand. Outside of that, I feel like Deprive is just stronger than a lot of, like, the secondary counterspells. Like, I agree with Mana Leak, and I agree with Remand, but, like, I feel like you can just play Deprives instead of, like, your Spell Pierces or your Spell Snares or your Negates or your Essence Scatters.
Yeah. Now,
that's just me.
Speaking of Spell Snare, actually, I brought in both copies of Spell Snare for Scapeshift, and I don't know if that was the right answer, per se, but it actually it worked out kind of nicely for me, because when you think about it, they do play a fair amount of 2-drops. A lot of the list play Snapcaster Mage. Obviously, they're all playing Secure Tribe Elder, and you know, Secure Tribe Elder is a huge part of what makes that deck good. Is
and
being
Far,
able to
Farseek as well.
Yeah, Farseek, Remand. I'm like, if I had a Spell Snare in my hand when I lost those games, especially that first game when we remanded my Deprive, probably could have won that game with a Spell Snare in my hand. But because they do play a lot of the backup counter spells or 2 mana as well, so. I was kind of surprised. Spell Snare was pretty good. Usually it's really just strictly good against like Affinity and stuff. Maybe like Black Green X mid range is got a lot of 2-drops in there too. But
okay, I'm back. I'm sorry.
Hey,
are you back for good?
Yeah, I'm back for good. My internet is being interesting.
Okay. Good old Colville internet over there.
Yeah. Time Warner Cable being a champ.
No worries. A little bit of technical difficulty we can handle.
Anyway, back to the deck.
Yeah, so back to what I was saying. Actually, I was pretty much just wrapping up. Like I said, Spell Snare was pretty good. I like it.
Yeah. I have a few questions.
Yeah, so yeah, why don't we go ahead and I'll let you guys fire off a few questions for me.
All right. What was I going to ask you now? So what do you think about Young Pyromancer?
Right, so Tarmogoyf versus Young Pyromancer. I thought Tarmogoyf was great. Like I don't see. I guess the real reason why people were playing
Tarmogoyf was great.
Well, I mean, is it worth the green? You think just for that?
Yeah, absolutely. And then again, you know, I mean, obviously I didn't play against Affinity, but Ancient Grudge out of the board too is nice, I guess. And even against, like, Burn, like, you can play that, the 2-mana gain 10 life spell from, cons.
I guess you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, that's the thing to do against Burn now, apparently. It's play life gain.
Well,
I mean, what else can you do?
Other than their skull cracks.
But you can do that in turn 2 before they can get their skull crack, so.
I guess so.
But anyway.
Treasure Cruise their hand back up, so. What do you do?
Well, dang it. But, so I think, honestly, I almost want to just blame people for playing Young Pyromancer just because they don't own Tarmogoyfs. Like,
have you seen the deck, though? With
I have. I played it with I mean, I did play a couple games with Young Pyromancer. And honestly, like I said, I think Tarmogoyf is honestly just as good, really. I do think, I mean, obviously it's got its pros and cons. Like, you know, obviously that the Young Pyromancer.
It's an interesting world that we live in when we're saying Tarmogoyf is just as good as something.
Well, okay.
I mean, it always had been.
Like,
it costs way too much
in
money.
In this deck, Young Pyromancer has a much higher maximum upside.
I just think you're cashing in on the Path to Exile and Abrupt Decay not being played as much anymore.
For reasons unknown to me.
Because Young Prime Minister is so much better than Tarmogoyf versus Abrupt Decay and Path to Exile, because it can potentially leave behind guys.
Well, it's almost guaranteed to leave behind guys in this particular deck.
Where Tarmogoyf is always going to be one for one.
Right.
Versus those cards.
Yeah. Agree. You know, there's quite a bit less spot removal. Well, at least for, you know, cards like Tarmogoyf in the format currently. Thanks to the decline of Abrupt Decay and Path to Exile to some extent. Of course, I mean, honestly, they probably haven't gone down a whole lot. Did you see that in the percentages at all?
Yeah,
Do you remember the changes?
Yeah. I'll tell our listeners in case you cut this part out, but I've been tracking modern play like top eight lists, what percentage of cards are in decks, and some cards are just way down and way up. I've been tracking it since beginning of October now, but I'm going to be more consistent. Abrupt Decay is down about 2% from the beginning of the month, which is a big percentage.
Big percentage change, yeah.
A big percentage change. Like, it doesn't seem like much, but when it goes from 15% to 13%, that's a big drop.
It's significant. So
yeah, Dark Confidant's down almost 5%, something like that.
Yeah.
Dismember's down about 3%. So
all the black green X cards.
Yeah, it's definitely a big. It's a different format than it was 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Completely.
So, yeah, definitely agree with you on that. And so, honestly, I think going the Tarmogoyf route isn't the wrong play, really. I mean,
I don't think so either.
Again, I think the Young Pyromancer is nice because it allows you to go wide. But, you know, and again, like going back to, like, you know, playing against Birthing Pod, which is still a very popular deck, Young Pyromancer still isn't that great. Like, getting 1/1 elementals is, like, pretty meh when everything they play is, like, either going to chump it or trade with it, you know, it's not great. So I think that was a huge benefit. And again, like going back to the Scapeshift matchup, probably would have swung for the same amount with Tarmogoyf as I did with if I had Young Pyromancer in there. Maybe, I mean, honestly, it could have gotten a little bit more with Young Pyromancer, but it probably wouldn't have made a difference in the games that I lost, at least.
I just think getting double value out of your spells with Swift Sphere plus, like if you had 4 Swift Sphere instead of the Snapcaster Mages.
Yeah, again, I wish I had done that.
You just been getting double duty out of all of them.
Right. And that would be nice, but I like Tarmogoyf. I think it could be a thing. I wouldn't count on it, but hey. I think people are kind of on the budget plan with this deck anyway, just because it's, you know. I mean, the thing is, and probably why it's so popular, is just
card. It's just like,
and that's the funny thing.
Doesn't seem that good to me.
Like, well, actually, so Matt, what do you know what the percentage was on Tarmogoyf?
Tarmogoyf's been down as well.
Well, you say okay, so it's down. It is now up to 210 on StarCityGames.com.
Well, not the price, paper. Just people playing it.
And well, yeah, I know, but like
whoa. Did you say the regular Tarmogoyf is $210?
Yeah. Despite declining in popularity, it is gone up.
Not too much, but
yeah.
It's been trending down for a while.
That is ludicrous.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the price is going to drop eventually when maybe they should just
reprint it at common. I don't know, but
yeah, it's like
Lord. Tarmogoyfs are too expensive. That's all I had to say. And this is coming from someone who owns a playset. So, anyway. Yeah, like I said, Tarmogoyf was good. So.
Yeah.
Young Pyromancer may still be the right decision, but if Tarmogoyf is worse than Young Pyromancer in this deck, it's marginally. So. Anyway. Did you have any more questions for me, Josh? Did you have any comments or?
No, you pretty much covered everything I was looking at.
Okay, cool. Matt, anything else?
No.
So yeah, that's all we had to say about this particular deck, and actually that brings us along to the end of our show for tonight. So again, just kind of want to make a couple things, throw a couple things out there, just in case you guys didn't know already. Of course, we do have a blog. we highly encourage you guys to go and listen to it. Again, we should be getting iTunes on iTunes here, hopefully sooner rather than later. With that, we may be looking into getting like a website at some point too. I should have mentioned that in the news, I guess, at the beginning of the podcast, but just something we've kind of, you know, thought about, tossed around. So that would be cool.
Yeah. So lots of exciting things to come for Modern Marvels.
Right. I'm excited for it. Anyway. So, yeah, again, that brings us to the end of our show. My name is Marshall. Again, joining me on the podcast tonight, Matt and Josh. Thanks again for joining me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem, man. Always a pleasure.
Yep. All right, thanks, guys. We hope you'll join us on the next episode of Modern Marvels. Thanks. Have a good night.
Peace.